Welcome. It's the last meeting of this seminar. So I kept, I hope, the best stuff for the last meeting. You've heard about many skills that you need to learn. One of the last skills is, of course, ethical behavior. And, of course, we are all ethical. Or as you will see in one of the jokes here, we are all ethical within the bounds of reason. But it's still a good idea to talk about some things. I noticed that some things are often skipped and not talked about enough. So that's what I wanted to do today, talk about some important things, I really think important things. So first, a little bit about our nature, humans, the duality of our character. We can all be angels or demons, as I will mention. I'll give you a link to an excellent talk on the topic of the psychology of evil or human ethics. Then a brief overview of various opportunities for unethical behavior, misconduct in science, as they call it. And then a very important idea that is often forgotten, I think. I noticed that a lot, especially in Poland. Of course, it happens everywhere in every society, but I'm noticing that a lot in Poland. This misunderstanding of the idea of noblesse oblige, nobility has obligations with it. Some sources of strength and that's going to be it. As you see, the last meeting, we have covered most of the things. The other things we didn't have the time for, but I definitely mentioned them. I do regret we haven't had the time to talk about creativity. We skipped it. I think one of the classes was lost because of the rector's decision. Other things, I think we did talk about important things. We skipped teaching, we skipped grant writing. These are also important, but reviewing also. But we didn't have the time for it. So the first idea that that I think you should, if you haven't had any encounters with it, I definitely recommend you a very good lecture on the psychology of evil by Philip Zimbardo. You can find it on TED. TED has excellent lectures, and this one is, I think, 15 minutes or so, definitely worth watching. I just uploaded this version of slides. I made some changes, so it's uploaded. It's on our webpage. What does he talk about? Just a few important things from the talk, but you should really watch the talk. It's really worth it. So he mentions famous experiments by Stanley Milgram. They are really well known. So if any one of you thinks about doing any empirical research with humans or animals, you should definitely be aware of those experiments. This is one of the reasons why we have ethics committees in universities that give approval for experiments. The experiment was quite terrible, really. He asked the question, Stanley Milgram, I think he himself was Jewish, he asked the question, could Holocaust happen in the United States? Of course, you know, that was, most people would say, no, come on, United States is such a free country, freedom of speech, freedom of behavior, love of democracy, of freedom, no, that could not happen. Here is the setup of the experiment, in case you haven't heard about it. If you haven't heard about it, every educated person should have heard about it. So here's an opportunity. Here is the experiment. Here is the experimenter. Here is the subject. The subject is told to teach this person behind the glass to teach something, some memory experiments, as they were told. If he makes a good, if he learns, if he can repeat things, everything is fine. If he makes a mistake, then to help him to learn, the subject applies electricity strapped to his hands. So it's like an electric chair. If you haven't learned something on time, then the subject has to apply 16 volt first, and then 50, 100 volt, up to 450 volt. Of course, this guy is an actor, so he pretends that he is getting electrocuted. When it comes to whatever, 200, 300 volts, he starts shouting, "Yes, please don't do that, I have heart condition, you will kill me, no, I don't want it." And then, of course, subjects wonder, should they do it or not? They ask the experimenter, "Should I do it?" "Yes, do it." "Who will be responsible?" "I'm taking the responsibility for it." You see the analogy. Concentration camps and some of the people behaving like beasts, and after the war saying, "I was just following orders, not my responsibility." They were telling us. The results were shocking. Societies have, 2% of people who have sadistic tendencies, 2-3%, very small number. I forgot the numbers here, but 60 or 70% of the people went up to 450 volts. Shocking. So this was an experiment, and the people were just selected from with a newspaper ad. So regular people, you know, plumbers, maybe university professors, doctoral students, you know, just people from the society. Zimbardo, but here are original pictures from that experiment by Stanley Milgram. Here is a subject, here is the guy who is taking full responsibility for electrocuting the actor. Here are the boxes. Of course, they were not real, so even if you press 450 volts, the actor probably got some signal and then knew he had to pretend something was happening, but it looked real. Another experiment that was conducted by Zimbardo later, many years later, of course Zimbardo was very aware of the experiment by Milgram, experiments by Milgram. He selected students, I don't think they were doctoral students, but maybe master's students, adults, young adults. He selected them, offered payment for the experiment, and then randomly assigned the students into two groups: prisoners and guards, randomly. So they were just, you know, students like us, like you, not a student anymore. They were assigned to be prisoners or guards. When they were prisoners, he did everything very real. He had a police car come to their apartment, arrest them, bring them to this false prison behind bars. The guards got long sticks, uniforms, and very quickly, within days, they were doing terrible things. They were doing all kinds of bad things to the prisoners. The prisoners were often very close to nervous breakdown. They actually interrupted that experiment a few days into the experiment. So again, we have normal people doing abnormal, very bad things. And the conclusion that Zimbardo is drawing from that is that we have this inside us, both angels and evils. He shows in the lecture the pictures of, I think, Swiss artist Escher. If you look at the pictures, you see demons or angels, depending on how you look at that. He says, every one of us has that in us. So this is an important idea. We are all able to be heroes, or we are all able to be demons. Of course, there are exceptions. There are people who will not get corrupted, and people who will get corrupted very easily, but it's all in us, an important idea. So if you think you are very, very ethical, very often, maybe you didn't have the opportunity to be unethical. Maybe. Just this is an ironic statement. For some people, virtue is a permanent lack of opportunity. It's a cruel statement about humans, but there is something in it. You know, sometimes we haven't had an opportunity to face a situation in which we could show our best side or our worst side. another picture of the demons and angels. The important thing that he also mentions, Zimbardo, is that the first step is whenever we face a decision, we change by that decision. And he warns, he tells us to nurture a hero in ourselves. So that when we face a situation in which we have to take a decision, we are prepared for it. We act as heroes and not as demons. He says that in Milgram's experiments with electricity, very often people who refuse to apply electricity at the level of 15 volts, they were the people who refused and didn't go any further. When they went to 50, 60, 100, they were more likely to go to 450 all the way. I got an advice once when I was still a young man, younger than you. I was a student in Warsaw. I went to confession one day, and the priest gave me a very good advice, I think. I remember it to this day. It was a very good advice. Because I was confessing something, you know, something that I had difficulties with. You know, I told him I'm kind of struggling with it. I confessed about it, you know, last time, and again, I couldn't deal with it. He told me something very wise. Beware of the first sin. Beware of, you know, just every step that you make in that direction. Be very, very extra cautious. So after confession, be careful not to make that first step. I think it's a great advice. Whenever, as I said, decisions change us, and also beware of making small concessions, small things. There's another situation like this in a movie that I will mention later that I absolutely recommend to you. It's a movie, the English title is A Man for All Seasons. The Polish title is Oto jest głowa zdrajcy. It's a movie about St. Thomas More in very difficult times when Henry VIII, the one who had six wives, was creating the Anglican Church. The story is kind of funny. He wanted to get another wife after his first wife, so he asked for annulment, the Pope. The Pope, I guess, decided that it's okay to get the marriage annulled on some grounds, and then he wanted to get annulment of that annulment, etc. So the Pope said no. And when the Pope said no, he said, well, in that case, I'm just splitting from the church. I'm creating our own church, and I'm going to be the head of that church. Thomas More, who was a politician, a statesman, opposed to that. And the whole movie is about how he tries to defend his life and at the same time stay faithful to his conscience and also faithful to the king, because he swore allegiance to the king also, yes? So it's a very subtle play in which there are wonderful dialogues, no CGI, no action, no flying things, a lot of good, excellent dialogues. One of such dialogues is when Oliver Cromwell wants to find a false witness to accuse Thomas More. They couldn't get him without a false witness because he knew the law very, very well. And the British, like Americans also, find the law very, very important. They try not to break the law. So they couldn't get to him, so they wanted to find a false witness. And Cromwell meets in a bar with a glass of beer and tries to get to somebody to testify. And then he gets out of him a small thing, just a small thing that he reports on Moore. And Cromwell says, well, it was easy, wasn't it? You know, after that small thing, the next and the next and the next, and ultimately he testifies against Moore and leads to his conviction and death. So I think it's a very important idea. Beware of the first sin, be careful. Small steps are in the bad direction. It's easier to make the next step and the next step and the next step. So very, very important idea. Scientists' encounters with ethics. So we have a lot of encounters, like every human being. You also have encounters with ethics daily, probably. But scientists have some specific encounters. The first one is the consequences of gaining knowledge. So you invent something, and that thing can be applied to war, to weapons, to bad things, starting with the discovery of how to make fire. Of course, you can cook with fire, but you can also burn somebody else's house with fire. The idea here is that as scientists, we have the obligation to participate in the societal dialogue about the consequences of inventions. I would not say we should not make inventions, but we should definitely take part in the dialogue how they should be used. So nuclear weapons, Einstein had played a role in that. And Einstein was the one who created an organization called PAGWASH. I don't remember what the abbreviation stands for. But it's an international organization of scientists who meet to discuss the consequences of scientific inventions. So that's one idea, that we should, especially if our inventions can be used for bad things, we should participate in the dialogue and voice our opinions about this. Curiosity drives science, of course, but it has limits. As a child, I remember somebody, one of my colleagues, said, if you cut the chicken's head, when the chicken is running, the chicken will keep running. That's an interesting idea, right? Kind of, as a child, I was very intrigued by that. The question is, would it happen to humans? You know, a human is running, you cut the head, is the human still running? Of course, I'm saying it kind of ironically, you know, I'm posing a question that would be very unethical to solve, but it's an interesting question, isn't it? Curiosity should have limits, and there are many examples of abuse of science in the name of curiosity. In concentration camps, both in Europe, Germans were conducting experiments with prisoners. Japanese were also conducting experiments with the people they subdued in China or Korea. In fact, after the Second World War, there was an ethical question: should the results that they obtained, should they be used in science or not at all? My wife worked for a while on the problem of the cervical cancer. The Germans did a lot of experiments on that in the concentration camps, and the question was, should the results be used or not? They ended up using them, but of course the source of the results was not really ethical, because people were suffering and dying because of that. Today, after the experiments of Milgram, for example, where I would say that it was quite traumatic for the subjects to see the actor dying of heart attack and pressing buttons, applying electricity, you probably would not get permission for an experiment like this today. And there was another famous experiment that is quoted as one of the experiments that led to that idea of permission, committees, ethics committees, to give permission for experiments. That was an experiment in the United States known as Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment. Tuskegee is a place in the United States. They decided not to treat syphilis among black soldiers, African-American soldiers. They wanted to observe how syphilis develops over time. Until, of course, it kind of came out, and then it was a scandal. And it's one of the reasons why there are ethics committees. So curiosity has limits, and that's one encounter. That's a joke. My friend, as a result of our experimentation, we have just lost a dear and valued colleague. On the other hand, we just have gained a publication. You have to watch where the money comes from. And I don't think in Poland it's a big problem, because there are not too many grants from industry. But there are grants in general that you should really think twice before accepting. A classic example is Philip Morris comes to you and asks you to conduct experiments on the effect of cigarette smoke on health. Should you accept it or not? I would say not. Why not? Suppose you conduct thorough research, you are very ethical, and you do that experiment with people and how bad or how good the smoking is, and the results are that smoking is really bad. That's probably the last time you get the money from Philip Morris, right? And what if the results are that cigarette smoke is the best thing that there is? Nobody will believe you because you got the money from Philip Morris. Yes? So I would say it's dirty money. Money doesn't stink. You know where it comes from, that saying? One of the Roman emperors wanted to tax sewage.
Sewage? Ugh.
And he said, well, money doesn't stink. You know, once they pay me the money will not stink like the sewage. So money sometimes does stink. So you have to be careful. Not too many opportunities in Poland, I think. But in general, who knows what the future will bring. So be careful where you get the money from. You are in the business of serving the humankind in the long run, not pleasing some individuals. Here's a joke, of course. I can prove it or disprove it. What do you want me to do? Clearly, somebody wants to offer funding for the research or money. It's a good idea to actually think long run, not short run. Not the money, pleasing the money in the short run, but in the long run. Being ethical, telling the truth, is a good long-term strategy. Maybe they will not be pleased when you tell them not what they wanted to hear, but you will get the reputation of somebody who is doing thorough research, is telling the truth. And that's a very important reputation to have. You might get money because of that. Intellectual property is another place where we as scientists have many opportunities for good conduct or misconduct. Inventions and ideas should be properly attributed and not stolen. If you heard an idea from somebody, somewhere, you have to attribute it. I heard it from this person. Just say it. When somebody made contributions to your papers, make that person a co-author. I've heard of things like, why would we add him to the paper? He doesn't need points anyway. He is on a teaching contract, right? That's, of course, an absurd idea. And there are many situations like this, so borderline situation. By the way, this topic is going to be discussed in our department next week, Wednesday, 1 o'clock. And I sent the announcement to Ms. Sakovic to pass it on to you. I haven't heard the announcement yet from her. Have you heard it? The question is, can it be counted for you as wykłady specjalistyczne? I hope so. If so, then you can just come to listen to a one-hour-long discussion on the topic of ethical behavior in publications. That will count, and it's also a very interesting topic. We hope to cover some immoral, unethical practices also in the academic world and how the system should guide us. So 1 o'clock next week, if you don't get an announcement, ask Ms. Sakovic or the director, can it count, and come. It's a short meeting and useful things, I think. You know the rules for paper authorship. We talked about this, right? Any person who made intellectual contributions significant enough that the paper would not come about without that person should be an author. Any person who has not made any intellectual contributions should not be an author. And you may encounter pressure, why don't we add Dr. Kowalski, Dr. Kowalska to that paper? Of course, you may sometimes find yourself in a difficult situation when you get that suggestion from your advisor. It's a difficult situation, but my advice is look straight in the eyes of your advisor and ask, what did Dr. Kowalska do exactly? Even if they force you, at least you will show that you don't like that situation. Unethical behavior does not like the daylight. they like kind of the, you know, half darkness, darkness. So bring all behavior like this into the daylight, show the boundaries. Tell with your voice, with your eyes, I don't want this to happen ever again, even if you are forced to do something. And by the way, I mean, if you agree to a deal like this, you are also acting unethically. Just like in a university environment, when you are a student, when you give your colleague, your buddy, your homework assignment or help in an exam, not only that person is guilty, but you are also guilty of giving, of letting copy. So be careful there. A peer review is another place where a lot of misbehavior can happen. You get a paper written by somebody, paper that is unpublished with fresh new ideas. It's very tempting to look at the paper, read it, and then think, oh, I would have come up with that myself too. And after a few days, a few weeks, forgetting that you didn't come up with it, but that person did. So essentially stealing the idea. Let's use the correct wording. It's stealing the idea. So you have to protect the author from others. Don't disclose it to others. You should also protect those authors from yourself. As you remember, there's this duality of character. I know people, very good scientists, who have, this is what the fame says, spreads kind of, you know, in the grapevine, that very often it happened that they essentially appropriated an idea of somebody else. Brilliant people, very, very good people in terms of intellectual capability, but they have the tendency to appropriate somebody else's ideas. So there are people like that too. Don't be one, don't be a person like this. Reputation is something that is very easy to lose, very difficult to gain. Remember the joke about Dr. Dropkin? I hope you remember that. It's so don't do things like that, ever. Finally, one of the last ideas, we have still plenty of time, but maybe I'll slow down in some things. The idea noblesse oblige, which is French for nobility has its obligations. The saying is old, centuries old. The idea here is that if you are privileged, if you are one of the aristocracy of nobility, aristocracy, you are very wealthy, you are educated, it's not that you go into the church and everybody tells you here in the front, you go anywhere, people are bowing and telling you, but it has obligations. Obligations are to take care of those less privileged than you. That's the original meaning. You have to really take care of other people, people who are in your villages, you know, give them whatever, health, education, take care of them. We notice that a lot in today's Poland, for example. Look at the politicians who are lying. They are lying because others are finding recordings. Look, 3 months ago you said that. No, I didn't say that. You know, look at that. That's precisely violating this idea of noblesse oblige. It's not only privilege to be a president, prime minister, or a minister, it's also a duty to give good example. It's not only a privilege to have a name written with a doctor in front of your name. That's very nice. Doctor this, doctor that, Kowalski, Kowalska. That's very nice, isn't it? But that's also an incredible obligation to you. You should act as a doctor, not as just anybody. In Poland, not in every country, in Poland there is actually an oath. When you get your doctorate, you will have to be part of an oath. I think it's in every university in Poland. You have it in the original. It is a very old oath coming from Middle Ages, when the first universities were created. Here is the English translation, but here is the Polish one. Look at the language that is used. You are not to do the work for personal gain, or vain glory, vanity, but so that the truth may be propagated more and its light, in which the salvation of the human race is contained, may shine more brightly. It is, of course, these are big words, but I mean, you can refuse to accept that oath, but then you should refuse to take the title of a doctor also. That's what it comes with, the doctorate in Poland. Other countries too. In the United States, I never had to lay an oath like this, but it's kind of, you know, a default. You have to realize that this is an obligation. The idea of obligation comes, I remember that from my high school, I had a very good teacher, and there was a Polish writer, you might say philosopher, a statesman, Andrzej Frycz Modrzewski, who wrote a literary piece, that he titled On the Penalty for Manslaughter. In this book, he criticized the laws in the Republic of Poland at that time. As you know, laws have developed. Poland was actually quite well advanced. We can be proud of what was happening in Poland then. We had democracy. Not democracy among everybody, like today, every person. It was democracy of the nobility, of the gentry. But it was a democracy. In other countries, people were murdering. The king could just tell you, I want him killed. There would be enough people who would take you, bring it out, and kill you, right? Queen Bona Sforza, the wife of Zygmunt Stary, apparently she was very upset that the king cannot just kill people or poison people. And what was happening in Russia also, there were ambassador came to complain that there was a newspaper article criticizing the Tsar. The king tried to explain that, you know, in Poland, newspapers have the freedom to write what they think. It's their opinion. They couldn't understand that, you know. So we were not really very bad. But even in that country in which there was a democracy and the laws, it was the country where people of different beliefs, different faiths were seeking refuge. I was recently interested in the name Zandberg, because people were calling him Danish. He was truly born in Denmark, but actually his name is definitely, the spelling is Dutch. I checked, yes, most of the people with this last name are either in the Netherlands or South Africa, the Buren. It's an old name. Very likely his family belongs, at least the father's side, belongs to people who escaped the Netherlands, I don't know which century, 16th, 17th century, escaping penalties for having different beliefs. I think his father's family is Jewish, so, you know, there were Jews maybe who moved to Poland because of the overall tolerance. We have not much to be really ashamed of in our history. In any case, he was criticizing the fact that if a peasant, remember it was the democracy of the gentry, the nobility, so peasants were not really very valuable. A peasant who would kill a nobleman or another peasant would be beheaded. But a nobleman who would kill a peasant, you just pay a penalty and that's it. And he wrote, that's a very unjust situation because the peasant is probably uneducated. He or she does not know better. But a nobleman is educated, rich, and he is standing on a candelabra. Yes? Everybody sees that nobleman. So when he does something bad, his penalty should be double of that of a peasant, because he is setting a very bad example to others. The same idea, the reason why I'm showing that is that you will be soon doctors. When somebody sees you picking your nose, oh, that's bad, isn't it? When somebody hears your language full of words that is not typically associated with educated people, that's bad. And people will look at you, they will observe you. I didn't tell in my village that I'm a professor. But many of my neighbors do know it. And, you know, suppose I go through the village and I do something bad. Well, that's bad. That gives a bad name of to professors, to educated people, to whatever, right? So whether you want it or not, you are going to be looked at, and you have to behave accordingly. That's the idea that comes from the work of Modrzewski. By the way, if you feel like learning more about Polish history, that's for the Polish speakers, of course, there is a wonderful series of programs on Polish Radio 1, Jedynka. I noticed they may have taken down Nowak. He is not błagonadiożny, as they say it in Russia. But I think his program, the recordings are still there. So you can still listen to his lectures. Excellent. They are like half an hour, 45 minutes. Lectures on Polish history, going from the very beginning of the existence of the Polish state until modern history. Dorota Truszczak, she may have been taken down too. He's an excellent historian, is writing J.A. Polski. I think four already have been published. There are still more coming. He's at Jagiellonian University. Those programs are excellent. If there is any part of Polish history that you want to learn in more depth, you can just look. There's probably 100 of those meetings where he's telling about different periods of the history. Absolutely very recommended. You've seen that, I think. I showed you that in the context of time management. That's also, you know, telling about this duality. I'm sure that the Samaritan, I suspect the Samaritan wasn't a saint. He also could do bad things as well, right? Just like the priests and Levites and Pharisees that passed that person maybe were doing also good things in addition to just passing the neighbor. But he treated that wounded man as his neighbor. This I don't think I have shown you. Another thing that comes from this obligation, there is an obligation, your title. You are already graduates of your university, already obligations, but with doctorate there's more coming, more obligations. Here is one of those fundamental experiments in psychology, really fundamental, that everybody should know. It's an experiment in which the subjects were asked to make a judgment whether this line is the same length as A, B, or C. But the surrounding was very interesting. By the way, this was done by a psychologist, Solomon Asch, born in Warsaw. I think he was Jewish by first and last name, but he was born in Warsaw. The experiments were done in the United States. His family must have emigrated there maybe before the war or maybe during the war, I don't know. In any case, the surrounding was tricky. It was done in the following way. Suppose you are all actors. I pay you for that, of course. And you are the real subject. There's only one subject. I tell you to come at 4:45. So you just walked in. But before you came in, I told the actors, when I ask you which of the lines is the same length as the one on the left, you should say A. You come, everybody is here there, you say, oh, I'm sorry for being late. I said, no, you are not late, you are on time. Just sit down. And then I show you this and ask, which line is the same length as the one on the left?
A.
Which line? What happens in that situation? It turns out that around 70% of the people, if I remember correctly, you can look at the numbers, you can look at the papers, 70% of the people in your situation would say A. Amazing, isn't it? Even though it's clear that it's B, isn't it? It's C, right? And probably everybody sees that immediately. Of course, there are many reasons why people in your position would say A. some people would doubt their own eyes, their own reasoning capability. They would think, oh, maybe, you know, so many people thought it was A, that probably I'm wrong. Other people would think, well, it's clearly C, but I don't want to say different than the others, so let me say A also. So there are many reasons, but the fact is that in this kind of situations, we are absolutely influenced by the opinion of the surrounding. It's really a fundamental experiment that you should remember. And what? Why am I showing it to you? You have now 1.5 duty of a regular citizen of this country, citizen of the earth, to say it's C. C, right? Soon you will have twice the obligation to say C when you get your doctorate. Why? Because you are the salt of this earth. You are the scientist. You are the, you know, you are carrying the candle, the light for the humanity, along with the obligation to use your brain, to use your judgment, not to get too influenced too easily by what you read, what you hear. Just like, you know, one German said, a lie repeated many times becomes truth. It's your obligation not to fulfill that statement said by Goebbels. Very important thing, remember about this. This is an obligation. This is something that you cannot go around. Somebody with a doctorate who is walking a path of propaganda or whatever, illusion affecting the whole society, that's very difficult to justify, to excuse. I may have mentioned that idea in 1931 in Germany. There was a book published, 100 Authors Against Einstein. You can find that book on the internet. Here's the link. I found it, so you can find the original. 100 people, of which there were essays of 28 authors, quotes from 19 other authors, and a list of celebrities disagreeing with Einstein relativity theory, saying, no, this theory is wrong. So, you know, it's like, I've heard some celebrities in Poland making statements like Sztur, Olbrychski, recently, who is that guy? He played in Ogniem I Mieczem. He played Andrzej Żebrowski, yes, making statements about politics and economy. Why on earth would I want to know what Sztur or Żebrowski or what's his name, Olbrychski think about something? Why on earth? They are very good actors, no doubt about this. I like watching them. Why on earth would I want to listen to them? It's as funny as this thing. 100 people wanted to be added to the list of people who disagree with Einstein theory. Among those people, there was one physicist only and three mathematicians. This book is pretty much worthless. When Einstein heard about this, he said, okay, fine, but why 100? If I were wrong, one would have been enough. That would be enough. That's a very somewhat funny story, but it's worth remembering also. Remember about this. Don't get outvoted, overwhelmed by your surrounding. Your duty is to use your own brain. That's what is the most valuable in you. And you are proving it, and you are going to be proving it more as a doctor, a scientist. You have to always be independent. I have to say that that courage to be independent, that's something that you know, developed in me over time. One of the influential people was Adolf Grünbaum, whom I mentioned several times. Grünbaum was absolutely, he was a great teacher. He died a few years ago. We were very different, he and I. He was so much older. He died at the age of 96, I think. And he was a fighting atheist, and I'm a practicing Catholic, you know, very, very different. But I loved him in the sense of loving a human being, a great teacher, and I learned so much from him. One of the things was this persistence. He wasn't very fast. When you start discussing with him kind of in real time, he would not be fast enough. But when he thought about something, he would give you an answer that just blows you off your feet. And he would be persistent. He had attacked, he addressed very difficult topics for a philosopher of science. He addressed the question of the nature of time. Wow, in his first word. Then he moved on to psychoanalysis of Freud, a very difficult topic. Because how can you attack Freud? Freud would say everything that you do is a result of your unconscious processes. So if you do something, that was unconscious process that you did. The same here. Very difficult to falsify. One theory of Freud, schizophrenia, terrible mental disease, according to Freud, is the result of repressed homosexuality. So you are homosexual, you are repressing it, denying it, keeping it in yourself, and that can lead to schizophrenia. So how can you attack it? Suppose you are schizophrenic. Say, aha! You are repressing it. And you tell me, no, come on, I'm married, I have 3 children, and I, right? You are proving to me that you are repressing it. How can you fight with me? It's very difficult, isn't it? How can he prove that he is not repressing it? It's impossible. Grunbaum still addressed that in a very persistent, very sometimes funny way. In case of this theory, he said, of course, this theory is falsifiable because people would accuse it of being a religion. It's like a religion. You cannot falsify it. Grunbaum would say, no, it is falsifiable, of course. Of course, after thinking about it for a long time, it's enough to find a homosexual person who is not repressing it. He's standing on the corner of the street saying, people, listen, I'm homosexual. And at the same time, that person is schizophrenic. And that falsifies the theory, yes, doesn't it? So it was a difficult problem. The third problem he started working on was philosophy and religion. That was funny. I don't think he's gone as far as he could. But I interacted with him many times. We discussed. I took a seminar from him on the topic. It definitely made me think, I sometimes joke, it made me a better, more conscious consumer of organized religions. Didn't make me an atheist, for sure. But definitely, he was right in many things that he was saying. Great teacher. And he had this persistence that I find exemplary in a scientist. I had to learn it. It is very difficult to get me, to kind of brush me off. Very difficult. And I attribute it to Grunbaum. I think it's a good thing, being inquisitive, but also persistent. If you think you are right, don't let the opinion of others to get you off your feet. Don't allow that. The same with Einstein. The movie I mentioned, A Man for All Seasons, you are responsible for your own actions. You cannot say, I was given orders, right? Or everybody does this, so I'm doing it too. There's a beautiful, one of the many beautiful dialogues, a friend of Thomas More, Duke of Norfolk. There was a declaration that everybody had to sign in order to get off the hook, right? Sign a loyalty to the king. Thomas More refused to sign it because it contained something that he just did not agree with at the level of conscience. I think it involved something with the church. The king declared himself the head of the church, so there was something around there. So Duke of Norfolk says, why can't you just sign it? Everybody signed. Look, he signed it, she signed it, everybody signed it. Why don't you sign it too? And then Thomas More says, well, if I die, you go to heaven for doing your conscience, and I go to hell because I broke my conscience. Will you go with me to hell for companionship? Right? Good dialogue. So you are responsible for your actions. You cannot. It's not an excuse that everybody does something. I love this joke. Make sure everything is done ethically. Within reasons, of course. Within reason, of course. W granicach rozsądku. I love that because ethics is, of course, there are sometimes difficult ethical problems, but you have to follow your conscience, and there is usually a clear line when you are acting unethically or ethically. You cannot be ethical and then do some things here and there that are kind of minor. These are the first 15 volts that make you weaker. They weaken you, and you are going to, at some point, if you do that, you'll continue. The slippery slope, as they say in English. There are no environments in the world that are free of political pressures. You have to realize that too. If you think that this university is full of politics, and you probably notice behavior that, well, why are they doing this? Well, you know, then you have to say that, you have to realize that every place on earth is full of politics. Here's a very good joke about United States where, actually it's already old. Today there are different issues that are different pressures. But at that time, sexual harassment and discrimination were, I mentioned to you, I think, in one of the meetings when I talked about guiding students. So here is a woman telling to the boss, all the other women in the office are suing you for sexual harassment. Since you haven't harassed me, I'm suing you for discrimination. That's, of course, a joke, but a good joke. I like it. So every environment has political pressures. And the pressures can be terrible, really. Suppose this is your only job you have, maybe not as a student, but you work somewhere. This is your job. You have family. You have to bring money to home. And then there is pressure from your boss to do something unethical or so. You are afraid to lose your job. The pressure can be bad, really bad, because you need to decide. Either I'm in the street and following my conscience, or I compromise and do as I'm forced to do. So I have never really been under terrible pressure, I have to say. So I'm maybe my virtuous permanent lack of opportunity, as I said. But I read stories, I heard to people who were under such pressure, and my general opinion is that it's worth to withstand it, to just remain yourself, because the conscience is something that is, you're going to live with it for the rest of your life. So if there is something that you clearly don't want to do, sometimes it's worth sacrificing all the other stuff and say, well, I'm not doing it. But there are going to be pressures, and you need to find strength in yourself to resist those pressures. So how to be a human being with a character? You can, in different languages, there are different words. There's a concept of a guy with balls. In Polish, you would say a man with, facet z jajami. Interestingly, in Polish, you can also say baba z jajami. And I think, if I understand correctly, I don't know how you feel about it, ladies, but I don't think it's an insult. What is meant by that is, this woman has a character. She is strong. This is the meaning, if I understand correctly. And it's a very positive statement. You know, this is not a woman you can just fool around with. She is strong. You know, you have to behave. So there is this concept of strong personality, and you could say, I would say a person with character, without using vulgar, because this ziyami is a little, on the vulgar side. So if you say a person with character, a woman with character, or man with a character, I think it sounds better. So let's use that one, a person with character. The idea, once I remember, I watched a brief documentary about the Sicilian Mafia. They played, of course, a positive role during the occupation of Sicily. They were organizing the society, etc. It deteriorated later. But the interesting idea is that it wasn't like hereditary. Like, the father was a mafioso, so I'm a son, I'm also going to be mafioso. Very often it happened that there was a strong character in the village, a strong person, And people just respected him. He was strong. He would not let any insult be directed to him. And that person essentially very often turned out to be one of those strong people who Mafia also wanted to have in its ranks. Here's a picture from Godfather number one, I think. And the idea is that you have character because you have chosen to have character. It's not that you are born with character. You've chosen to have character, to be a strong person. I'm not glorifying Mafia in any way, but just, you know, this idea of a strong person that people respect. So again, what is the difference between people studying at Stanford, MIT, Carnegie Mellon, and you? Very often the difference is in your head. You think, oh, you know, these are top universities. This is a small provincial university in Podlasie region. Forget about this. You can do very good research, top research, being here. Every one of those universities at some point was a beginning, a small university, and people somehow did good work. So get rid of that. Decide that you are a strong person and that you are going to do good work, strong work. Strength of character radiates. A lion does not have to roar in order for the other animals to be afraid of it. And it's not things like, you know, you have a better car, you have a better watch, you have better clothing. It's other things. It's your inner strength that radiates. There are many idiots with $10,000 watches and $100,000 cars. But you can see they are idiots once they open their mouth, essentially. So it's something different. It's in you. And it's self-decision, as I said. Character is important because individual people change the world. And here is an anecdote that I heard. Apparently, it's a true anecdote. There was somewhere in Africa, one country, there was a herd of young elephants. The older elephants were killed by poachers for the ivory. And they were just young males, and they were misbehaving. They would, you know, uproot some trees, destroy some cottages. Essentially, they were troublemakers. You know how they solved the problem? They have shot an older animal, shot with an injection, made it a tranquilizer, an older elephant somewhere else. They transported that older elephant with a helicopter to the area where the young elephants were acting up, and within weeks, the misbehavior stopped. The older elephant became the alpha male in that group and essentially taught the rest of the animals to behave better. I don't know the details of that story. Sometimes stories are not exactly true, but that is a beautiful story, isn't it? Sometimes one person makes a big difference. This is a piece of Proverbs, the Old Testament, saying essentially the evil will bow before the good and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Being a righteous person, sometimes people will just respect you. They will be afraid of misbehaving in front of you. The idea here is, I may have mentioned that there are two types of women. Remember the two types, why I'm saying that often? I told you that, the Japanese student. Did I tell you that story? Yes, two types of women. One type is you can swear as much as you want and they don't mind. And the second type is you cannot do that. The question is, how on earth did the second type manage to stop swearing in their presence? I guess sometimes it's a look. You swear. You look at the person who's swearing. Sometimes you say something, and they know they should not do it. Yes? And the same idea, right? You have to radiate that character, show the boundaries. That's it. You don't go any further. You can show that not only to swearing people, you can show it to your husband, to your wife, to your friends, to colleagues, to your advisor, you can also do that, yeah? I'm not the person who will allow adding unknown individuals to be authors of my paper. Yes? One way or another, you can do that. And the world changes because of these individual people with character. And they are making a big difference. The crowd of people, you know, they are just following the crowd themselves. But individuals will make a difference. How do you destroy a nation effectively? Well, you remove people with character. That's a very effective way. You've seen some pictures here. This is the Germans rounding up professors of Jagiellonian University. All of them went to the concentration camps. Many of them never returned. This is a picture from Katyn, I think. And these are some individuals killed, all of them after the World War II, by the Soviet regime. Very effective. We are still suffering because of those losses. Still, the Polish elites have not completely restored from that. People call themselves elites, but many of them cannot be elites because elites don't behave the way they do. Very simple test. Elites don't behave like that. So it's they are self-called elites, but that's it. By the way, that's what I thought about. That's a statement from a lecture by Novak. I definitely recommend it, on the concept of elites. He's incredible, and this is a great lecture. So if you have, it's 1 hour, 58 minutes with the discussion, with questions. The lecture itself is 1 hour. Absolutely recommend it. You've seen this picture, you know, the foundations are always important. If you want to be ethical on the outside, be ethical on the inside. That's the idea, no? Have a good, solid stand, a rock. Don't build your character on the rocks so that you are strong. Have important things put in your head first, and then the less important will find their way. You'll know what to do, and if you don't do it in the right order, then this will happen. You need to find peace and strength inside first. If you don't like yourself, then people will not like you. This is the beginning. You have to like yourself. A quote from Marvin Gaye, a singer, if you can't find peace within yourself, you will never find it anywhere else. An Italian proverb, he who is well with themselves, I mean, feels good with themselves, is well with everyone. A good rule. I think it's absolutely a wise rule. Where do we get strength and inspiration? Because as you remember, the very idea of this seminar is that I'm sharing with you things that I have learned from other people. That was the easiest way to learn. Of course, you can read about it in the book, but observing others is the best idea. So again, you can learn this strength from other people. This is the most effective way. So look around. There are many, you may be under pressure, you may be in difficult situations, and so you need inspiration from other people. Definitely, it's the easiest way. Of course, your parents, your family, look around. If you look deep enough into your ancestry, you will find impressive people, knights, soldiers, partisans, teachers, priests, farmers. There are many aspects of our history that we can be really proud of, really proud of. And there's a difference between patriotism and nationalism. Patriotism is being proud of your culture. Nationalism is thinking that your culture is better than others. What I mean is patriotism. You know, think about be proud about your heritage without any negative statements about other people. Other people have also the right to be proud of their heritage. But you'll find it. Definitely, if you look deep enough, you will find it. If you don't find them in your family, look broader. There are many examples around you. And even if you find that your roots are not that good, you can always make a change. You can be the first to be different. There's this quote from, I think, a movie, American Beauty. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. Right? Rest of your history, of your family history. Thomas More, that movie is absolutely a must. It's a very impressive story. John Paul II made him the patron of politicians. that movie is actually showing him acting politically and ethically. At the same time following his conscience as acting politically, following the law, defending himself using the law. If we have the time, I'll play you that that piece. That's the, one of the last scenes of the movie when they actually condemned him based on false witness. I was very lucky in my high school when I was a kid. I had a librarian who was a very impressive woman. She was very modest, very modestly dressed, kind of gray, dark. She was a widow. And it's only from other people that I learned who she really was. She was one of the Hartsmiths, which is, I don't know what the English name of that is. It's a high rank among the scouts. During the Second World War, she was Hartsmith in the Lublin region. Her husband, Madielski, is the author of that song, Kołysanka, Dziś do Ciebie przyjść nie mogę. He was a drugstore owner and also amateur photographer. Many pictures of Lublin made by him. He made also, he was also, they were both active in the underground. They pictures that her husband made were of Majdanek camp, a lot of essentially spying on what Germans were doing at that time. After the war, he was arrested, spent some time in Lublin castle. They destroyed his health. He died a few years after being released in the late 1950s. She was a widow, died in 1980s. I learned from him a lot. She couldn't be a teacher because they wouldn't let her teach. Communist Poland, how could she teach? She would destroy the minds of the new socialist people. So she was a librarian, but I learned from her a lot, many, much more than from other teachers, just by simple interactions. It turns out that she also supported a lot teachers. My teacher that I mentioned last week about the teacher who said, you don't need alcohol when you are young, that's what she said to her. Don't worry, this will all be over one day. And she was right. When I went, when I go to Lublin, whenever I go to Lublin, I visit her grave. There are always flowers on her grave, always. So there are many people in the from that school who really have a lot to thank to her. Gandhi is a source of inspiration, and the movie that they made about him, by Attenborough, I think it's a very nice movie. Of course, there were critiques of that, this and that, but a very nice movie. There's one scene when the British, when a British priest comes from India to South Africa to help him, essentially. He says, well, you probably are surprised that I'm coming here to assist you. And Gandhi says, no, no, I'm not surprised. When you are fighting for a just cause, people seem to just pop up right off the pavement. That's the nature of humans also. Justice, there's some elementary feeling of justice in us, even if we are people who are ethical within the bounds of reason, still justice kind of surfaces in us. So it's very typical, very normal, that people who fight for the just cause, they will also find other people who support them. It's really a good idea, it's wise to actually follow the just cause. Very inspiring in this case. This is another story that the first time I visited Białystok, I slept in one of the student houses. I was a guest, Professor Bobrovsky invited me, and I couldn't sleep because of the jet lag. So I turned on the TV in the middle of the night, and there was this Polish movie, Pora na Czarownicę, about a priest, his name is Arkadiusz Nowak, he was played by Linda. The priest essentially created a place for people who had HIV, HIV. They were infected, they were, you know, at some point they would get AIDS and they would die. So he created a place for them, and he tended to their needs. There were many problems. The villagers didn't like it. They thought that that would be danger for the people in the village. The mosquitoes would bite people with AIDS and then carry over to others, etc. And there's a beautiful conversation between him and another priest. It's a funny conversation. Maybe we'll have a time to watch it. If not, find it. I think I haven't checked it today, but should be there still on YouTube. Very nice conversation in which Linda, the actor, says, "I'm just following my conscience. Some people are against it, some people are supporting me. The same among the church hierarchy. Some bishops are against me, some bishops support me. I'm just following my conscience." And because the other priest asked him, "How is it that you always succeed, that always things are turning good for you?" And he said, "Well, I'm following my own conscience, my heart." Another good example for inspiration, with a few quotes, real quotes from Wyszyński. We have a lot to thank to him, not only Catholics, but every Polish person. He stood for the freedom and for the freedom of the nation, of the society. He won. Remember Dr. Dropkin joke, reputation is very easy to lose, hard to regain. That's an important idea. We know we have more things in Polish. That's an old verse from Oświecenie period, I guess, about honor. You probably know it. If you don't, you should know it. There were many inspiring things written at that time. This is, of course, fiction. We don't know much about the real William Wallace, but in the movie where Wallace was played by Mel Gibson, there's this sentence, "All people die, some never live." Some things are greater than life, and luckily my generation, your generation so far, has been spared a war, times where we are really tried. I'm kind of lucky, you know, I'm approaching 70 and I have never had to be part of a war, but that can change, you know, you never know. Things are getting interesting in the world anyway. The world changes because of single people, that's definitely a rule. Here is a summary, and we have a few minutes, maybe I can play you a couple of these movies that are really worth watching. Because knowing that you are probably very busy, you may not have the time to watch them on your own. So let me get, I think I have them saved here. Okay, I think this should be okay. This is that scene that I mentioned. One of the last scenes of the movie. This is a false witness, Richard Reach, a historical figure. Why is there no...
"I do solemnly swear the evidence I shall give before the court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
So help me God, sir.
So help me God.
Marriage! On the 12th of May, you were at the Tower?
I was.
For what purpose?
I was sent to carry away the prisoner's books.
Did you talk with the prisoner?
Yes.
Did you talk of the king's supremacy of the church?
Yes.
What did you say?
I said to him, supposing there were an act of parliament to say that I, Richard Rich, were to be king, would not you, Master More, take me for king? That I would, he said. For then you would be king.
Yes.
Then he said, but I will put you a higher place. How if there were an act of parliament to say that God should not be God?
This is true, and then you say...
Continue.
Then I said, I will put you a middle case. Parliament has made our king head of the church. Why will you not accept him?
Well,
then he said, Parliament had not the power to do it.
Repeats the prisoner's words.
He said, Parliament had not the competence.
sorrier for your perjury than my peril.
Do you deny this?
Yes. My lords, you know if I were a man who heeded not the taking of an oath, I need not be here. Now I will take an oath. If what Master Rich has said is true, I pray I may never see God in the face, which I would not say were it otherwise for anything on earth.
That is not evident.
Is it probable? Is it probable that after so long a silence on this the very point so urgently sought of me, I should open my mind to such a man as that?
Sir Richard, do you wish to modify your testimony?
No, my lord.
Is there anything you wish to take away from it?
No, my lord.
Have you anything to add?
No, my lord.
Have you, Sir Thomas?
To what purpose? I am a dead man. You have your own will of me.
Then the witness may withdraw.
There is one question I would like to ask the witness. That's a chain of officer wearing. May I see? The Red Dragon. What's this?
Sir Richard is appointed Attorney General for Wales.
For Wales? Why, Richard, it profits a man nothing to give his soul for the whole world. But for Wales.
My lords, I'm done.
Okay, that was this fragment of that movie. There are many really impressive dialogues that you will love to see. Gandhi, or maybe better that Polish movie, Pora na Czarownicę. I hope this is the one. I wonder if the subtitles are in English, we'll see. Luckily we have internet.
Mogę ci radzić to, robić to, co ci nakazuje intuicja.
It's a very short scene. 6 minutes 23. Just a couple of minutes. Here's the meeting with the British priest coming from India. So I would like to thank you for the semester. I passed the list, so make sure that you sign. If there are any problems with presence, because remember, you have two absences that are completely not my interest. If there are more, I will send you individual email so that we can somehow make it up or meet and discuss the classes that you were not present at. Very good. I'm sure I will see you somewhere during the next 3 years. Good luck with your careers and your doctorates. Thank you.